agenda is the division's omnibus bill, and I would like to ask Mr. Albrecht to walk us through any changes from last week that have been made in the bill. And then we have some amendments that members are free to offer if they'd like. I'd like to offer testimony. Then we'll lay the bill aside and we'll hear Senate File 954 and decide if we want to add that to the omnibus bill. Mr. Albrecht.
Madam Chair and members, starting with the spreadsheet that's in your packet of stuff, I just wanted to point out a couple of things that are different than they were when you saw this last time. First, on line 43, within the Achieve Scholarship appropriation is $4 million specifically for advising and counseling grants, and so that amount is shown separately on line 43, just to meet a full disclosure kind of requirement.
These were grants that the Office of Higher Education did 2 years ago, and we think it's advisable to be able to continue for another 2 years so we can get a full 4 years of data like we're doing with the ICAP programs. And in your packet or on your front of where you're sitting is the list. I know Senator Roebling had asked for this, of the high schools that have received, there may be more than high schools, I'm not sure. I think they're all high schools, that have received advising and counseling grants. And there also is the list of the ICAP programs that will receive priority funding for another 2 years.
Okay. Madam Chair, on line page 2, on line 74, in the Minsky appropriation, there is $100,000 for the Institute on Renewable Energy Technology, I believe is called, and that's shown as a separate item in Minsky for $100,000, a one-time appropriation. And also on page 2, lines 107 and 108 show appropriations that were overlooked at the time in Article 3 for the Board of Dentistry for the oral health practitioner licensing. Those are appropriations from the state government special revenue fund. And on line 110 and 111 are appropriations in 2012 and 13 for the Department of Health to do an evaluation report, I guess, on how the oral health practitioner's language is being implemented.
Any questions on the spreadsheet?
And Madam Chair, going to the bill document, on page 1, lines 111 and 112 show these are I'm only pointing out the things that were not in the document last time. And so those two lines show the appropriations from the state government special revenue funds that I just discussed. And the related appropriation for the Board of Dentistry is on line 1.26. On page 6, line 6.20, there was an amendment to the MinLink Gateway and Minitech's appropriation that was put in last time but is now taken out.
That was a Senator Lynch amendment, and we had some jurisdictional issues with K-12. Even though we fund MinLink, they feel like they do the policy on regional libraries. So we agreed that we would take it out.
Moving on, Madam Chair, on page 10, beginning on 10.9, and then there are a number of other references in that paragraph. It used to require the Board of Trustees to submit their plan to the Commissioner of Finance, and that has been changed to the Director of the Minnesota Office of Higher Education.
The plan, regarding the federal stimulus money.
That's correct, Madam Chair.
Senator Latz?
A question occurred to me about the MinLink matter. Is the appropriation then being was an appropriation that was in there, or just policy language that was in?
It was policy language.
Is that going to appear then in the other jurisdictions bill?
I don't know. And I don't know if, you know, Senator Lynch could also offer a floor amendment.
Would you repeat that? I didn't hear what you were saying at the very end.
Senator Lynch.
Madam Chair, Senator Latz, the policy language that was amended last time in this division will not be included in the other bill. And I do think that it's an issue that warrants further discussion, and I'm interested in working on that during the interim.
Thank you.
Chair.
Yeah. Senator Tomasoni.
I'm Chair on page 8 on line 829. The
policy language instead of
review of these priorities here. You know, I would feel much more comfortable if it were the Chancellor that would review them and then make a recommendation. It would seem to me that they're more hands-on and are dealing with these things on a daily basis, and that they can go to the Board of Trustees and make a recommendation or do whatever the Chancellor does as far as these missions are concerned. I think that each one of them in their areas are probably very important. I know what's going on up in the Northeastern Higher Educational District is extremely important to the area. They are working with the high schools. They're working with the industry. The applied learning program that's going on there is something that appears to be very successful. I would hate to think that somebody who doesn't know exactly what's happening might be making a decision on it. And so I would rather have somebody who's more in tune with all of these programs, such as the Chancellor's office through some of the people that work for the Chancellor, that can do the review as opposed to the board itself. And I would feel more comfortable if the language said that the Chancellor must review and then maybe make a recommendation to the board.
Would you like Mr. Fuller to
yes.
do that language? Okay, we'll come back to that. Okay, Mr. Albrecht. Well, I think we can make it.
Madam Chair and members, moving on then to page 12 on line 12.20 and 21. These are the appropriations to the University of Minnesota for the federal stimulus money, and it has the same language change directing them to submit the plan to the Director of the Office of Higher Education rather than the Commissioner of Finance. On page 17, on lines 17.1 and 17.9 are the appropriation riders for Article 3, which is the oral health practitioners and dental therapists language. And on page 21, Section 3 is the Minnesota P20 partnership, and it came to my attention after we approved the document last time that there had been amendments in the state and local government committee that had not been incorporated into the language we have, and so those have been incorporated now.
Oh, good.
And that's the end of the changes, Madam Chair. One additional thing, members. In your pile of papers there are the two provisions that are repealed at the end of Article 1, I believe. They're in the current version of the Achieve Scholarship Program. Subdivision 8 requires documentation of qualifying household income, but in the context of the other changes that are in the bill, that would no longer be necessary because the students would be completing a FAFSA form that would include information about their income. And Subdivision 13, which specifies how the scholarship would be dispersed, is no longer relevant within the context of the changes that are in the bill.
And Senator Roebling, before you came in the room, I mentioned that we have the list of high schools who got the advising and counseling grants here, and the list of the groups that got the ICAP grants are here too. Okay, do we have Senator Tomasoni's amendment? Okay, why don't we pass out then the 20, JCF 20 and JCF 21 amendments? Members, you know, we've had hearings over the last couple years on the issue with the Minsky institutions educating electricians, and then the electricians can't get jobs because there really is kind of a – oh, I have these already. I'm going to give them to Dennis. There's really kind of a flat need for electricians. And so you have a lot of them that are sitting on the bench and collecting a lot of money in unemployment, I'm told. So the auditor did a report, and these are just a couple amendments that are taken from the auditor's report. And we may want to, you know, we could call these placeholders. We may want to embellish on them a little bit, see what Minsky thinks about them. And there are two alternatives that Mr. Fuller came up with, and it basically has to do with implementing the auditor's recommendations. So wait till everyone has the amendment. The 820 is a little bit more explicit, and the 21 is a little kind of broader. And I'm interested in hearing what the committee has to say. So the 21 says that the board must assess labor market data when conducting college program reviews. Colleges must provide prospective students with a job placement rate for graduates of technical and occupational programs offered at the colleges. So it's fairly broad. It's not just electricians. I mean, this could be an issue with plumbers, too. And then the 20 says that the board must assess labor market data when conducting college program reviews. The board must require a campus to enroll no more than the approximate number of students in a technical or occupational program that the labor market data indicates have a reasonable likelihood of obtaining a job in the program field of study. Colleges must provide prospective students with the job placement rate for graduates of technical and occupational programs offered at the colleges. So I'm kind of open to, I'd like to do one of these versions, but I'm open to what the committee thinks.
Madam Chair.
Senator Roebling. You
know what I mean? I like the 21. Mm-hmm. And this is why. I mean, it doesn't necessarily mean that if we ask the Minsky board to limit placement of students in courses that the private sector will, or that neighboring states will. And so students who really want to pursue that field, mm-hmm. if they can't get into a very limited amount of courses available, then they will probably just go somewhere else to seek that. And I think the burden maybe should fall more on the person who is trying to attain the education, and letting them know that maybe you really want to do this, but there might not be a job for you when you get out. And they go into it knowing that. And a lot of them may change their mind hearing that information, and I think it should be provided. But I don't know that we should fully limit Minsky from offering the courses, because there will be other alternatives available.
Well, what we hear now is that what some of the colleges do in marketing their program, because they want to keep a viable program, is they tell students electricians can make $60,000 as a journeyman electrician. You just do our two-year program, and then you go and become an apprentice, and within a few years you're a journeyman making that money. What they don't tell them is that, however, there are no jobs. And you might do your apprenticeship program, and then be laid off because now you're going to be more expensive. And let's just hire another apprentice to do the work, as long as we have the supervisor that's a licensed electrician. So I think there can be some game playing that's going on, and ultimately the student loses. So they do need to have a lot of information. Senator Tomasoni, which version do you like?
Madam Chair, I'm listening to what you're saying, and I listened to what Senator Roebling said, and I think the 20 gets at the problem, because at least on maybe doesn't get to the problem, but at least it has a better likelihood of getting to the problem just because of the fact that it at least tells the student that you have a chance of getting a job or you don't have a chance of getting a job. I don't think it stops the student from taking the course if they want to, but I think they at least know that that there's a certain likelihood, and then the student can make the decision from there, but at least
Well, I think both of them do give the information to the students. What right. 20 does that is stricter is it says the campus really has to cut back on their programs. And that is a little bit different from what Senator Roebling was saying. I mean, I know I ran into this woman the other day who was going to school at Century College. She's from South Dakota. She couldn't get into the program in South Dakota, but she wanted to go into this field. I don't remember what it was. And so she's doing the program at Century and living here, I assume going back to South Dakota then to look for a job. So that can happen, but I'm just worried that, you know, we've got kind of tight budgets. Maybe we need to give the college some direction that when you're cutting back and cutting back on programs because you don't have enough money, these are expensive programs, you better, you know, pay attention to the labor market and making sure that the students you graduate are going to be able to find jobs. Senator Sharon.
Thank you, Senator. In addition to those concerns, when we've talked about this in general, I've been concerned about what I call the state's interest in the various, its share, its contribution from the general taxpayer in the overall educational system. And that's a finite resource, and targeting that and focusing that where there is an outcome where someone is going to be able to find work, where it's directed towards those fields where there is a demand and a need in order to sustain the economy in the future, rises in my mind to the level of interest that I think we have a responsibility to make certain that the state's interest or the tax dollars that we contribute to this beyond the tuition that the students pay for their education is represented as well, that it's not only the student's interest, it's also the state's interest in targeting those dollars that we send to the systems towards the kind of education that will help the students really be productive in this society. I am reticent at the same time because, you know, line 1.4 through 1.6 really
labor market data.
Requires the board to do something. We're telling the board directly how to manage the system, and I am conflicted about
right.
that. But I really do think that we should have as a policy an expectation that there's an analysis of what we need in the state and that the state's interest has to be connected to that. So I am going to support or speak in favor of these two options,
well,
220.
I guess we might have heard the state auditor's report. I didn't recall it. Someone brought it to my office this morning. And the Minsky response was fairly weak to what they plan to do. You know, they did say they were going to conduct college program reviews and include labor market data, but they didn't have a very robust response. So I think that we need to let them know that this is still very important to us, and, you know, maybe down the road or in conference committee or something, we won't need to have such prescriptive language. But, you know, I'd like them to come back to me and let me know what they think about these options. Senator Tomasoni.
I don't know if they already do the 21, but I got a funny feeling with brochures and everything going on that they're probably advertising the labor market, and they're probably telling kids what the job placement is if they ask the question. So I don't think we get anywhere on the 21. I think with the 20, at least we are trying to say, you know, don't produce so many that we got to glut in the market and nobody can get any jobs. And,
right.
and so... You want me to move that one, or
let's hear from Senator Clark, and I think a couple other people, and then you can make your motion.
Well, Madam Chair, members, I mean, obviously this has been an ongoing issue. We've been trying to figure out how to address it, and obviously, in general, trying to be more about what we want instead of telling them how to do things. So, a question I have and a concern I have with 20 is, I don't. Like Senator Sharon, I'm probably a little bit conflicted. My biggest issue is I think it's vague. I think we're going to have to identify labor market data. Are we talking labor market in that immediate metropolitan area? Are we statistically, are we talking about in the state?
Mr. Fuller.
Are we talking about in the Midwest?
Madam Chair, Senator Clark, it is left wide open so that the thought was if they can produce any labor market data, so in response to Senator Roebling's issue that people may come here and get a job in South Dakota, and that labor market data supports that placement, it was the thought that that's why it was drafted this way. So it's not state or regional. It's just if you have labor market data, generic, and maybe it needs to be refined more, then you can justify a program if your graduates are getting jobs in that labor market area.
But at least we would know that there are jobs in North Dakota because they have oil and money.
So
there are no jobs in Minnesota for this.
So, Madam Chair, the part of the thought then with not being very precise there in this case would be allowing them the flexibility of determining what the labor market actually is and that we wouldn't be telling them what it is.
Right. I mean, they'd have to find real labor market statistics.
Right. But, I mean, a lot of times we do talk about.
At least students would know. They might have to relocate.
Let's face it, we do talk about with the technical colleges, how are they doing a job in that immediate area, about what the openings are, and that a student should get to move, and perhaps they want to be working somewhere else that would, there's an opening at this campus, but there's a job in another part of the state. So I just was trying to get a better handle on what you're doing. And, you know, we've got a bill that's coming to the floor that we worked on in the jobs committee that in the future I hope actually might help us with this, and that was the bill that started off looking at merging the workforce centers into the MNSCU system in part because of this actual issue. And what it's going to be doing at this point is having several local collaborations looking at adult learning, adult training, and adult workforce needs, and then coming back with recommendations. And at least part of the thought there was, frankly, let's get the two-year colleges to do a better, utilize our WEA boards, our local workforce boards, about helping better forecast what the needs are for the businesses. So I think if as long as we're identifying this more broadly, I think that certainly 20 could be a good tool.
Okay. Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, one of the things that concerns me about this is if we say this, I would expect MNSCU to shut down some programs right away. I mean, they shouldn't have any electrical programs or construction trades programs because, obviously, at this point in time, there are no jobs available. And I don't know how strict we want them to be about this. I have concerns, though, that if we would shut those programs down, Dunwoody would expand theirs. And I remember that time when the electricians came in on this very issue, and I asked them to raise their hands to see how many had been educated in the MNSCU system and how many in places like Dunwoody, and two-thirds of them were at the Dunwoody type of institutions. So, you know, I don't know that we can really control the market by doing this. And I don't know that we should be trying to control the market. I have a feeling that if we do, then at some point they're going to miscalculate, then we're going to have a labor shortage. And people take 2 years to get through the program. And then what do we do? Workers who are in that field will be happy because obviously their wages would go up because there's a shortage. But I don't know that we should be hopping into it and trying to adjust and manipulate the market that way.
We do have, I mean, they do project into the future. I don't know how accurate they are, but I mean, we're projected to need about an additional 300 electricians a year to 2018 is what electricians told me this morning. That's not very many, 300. Senator Erickson Ropes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I agree with Senator Roebling, and in fact, she hit a few of the talking points I had scribbled down on my paper here. But I have some pretty serious concerns between being too prescriptive on the larger amendment here, number 20. 21, you know, I think we should be considering the labor market data and making that available for students, potential students, and graduates. That's just part of the information they should be able to have and access. But whether or not they want to continue to choose because of their avocation or passion a particular educational pursuit should still be up to them. And it's a little frightening to me to see that we're directing schools to maybe limit education based on the market. And Madam Chair, okay, you're responding
to that. Well, I think that's the whole point of the two-year colleges. the technical colleges is to be in touch with what the labor market, especially the local labor market, needs, and to be responsive. And so we expect them to be responsive when there's a shortage. Why, you know, we need more students educated in this field. Why wouldn't we want them also to be responsive when there's a glut? You know, we want them to be nimble. I mean, that's why I think the for-profits have been able to fill a niche in our educational system is because they're very nimble. And I think Minsky needs to be nimble, too. Oh, Senator Sharon, sorry. Did you finish your thought? I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, Madam Chair, but you had a very, you know, dramatic
yes, I did.
visual to what I just said. Well, and I agree. And then I guess I would say the same thing that Senator Sharon says. And yet.
Okay.
You know, responding to the labor market, yes, is one thing. But, you know, I don't know. When we start putting it in statute, rather than letting the colleges and universities make those decisions on their own, then we are painting ourselves into this more lumbering kind of pace rather than a quick and nimble pace. I think the colleges and universities can do that nimbly if they choose to do that. But it does disturb me because I am worried about the economy, and I think Senator Roebling mentioned that people may misread cues in the economy, for example, you know, what we're living through right now with a downturn, and decide, well, the construction market's really on the blink, and let's, you know, close down those programs. Mm-hmm. And we're going to be 2 years or maybe 4 years behind if we try to ramp something up.
One thing that's rather nimble about electricians is they can start people in apprenticeship programs right out of high school. And there are a lot of electricians that, you know, if they go to a two-year Minsky institution, then that's a year of that is applied toward their five-year apprenticeship program. So, you know, I mean, there is some nimbleness within the profession. Senator Sharon.
Thank you, and I am conflicted about the micromanagement component of this, but I got to tell you, I have felt like, you know, we continually get asked for resources, financial resources, and I think that we should have an interest in this. It's overriding my concerns about the micromanagement because this language simply says that the state has an interest in determining where we should be targeting our resources. And we do market control when we recognize there's a shortage of nurses and we start to address all sorts of grants or loans or programs or lawyers who want to serve those who are not able to afford. We are constantly impacting the marketplace with our policies. This simply says that you have to have some valid basis for taking, even though it's only 50% now, should be more of the state's interest in what we pay, that the state ought to be able to say to the system that we ought to direct that towards an educational program that has a need, that the students could get employed in, and that we anticipate in the future is going to be a growing need in our state, and that we expect resources to be redirected there rather than continually trying to sustain the same system and then adding resources to the system for new growth. This really came, if I remember, Senator Pappas, out of discussions about what is the system doing to analyze where it's investing its programs in its educational programs in the state at the 2-year system and the 4-year system, and what programs are they releasing in order to advance other investments. And this is just one. The electricians was just one. But there probably are other places where this, since this is broadly stated, where you can take a look at both technical and occupational programs in the labor market data and anticipatory data about where the new jobs, green jobs, for example, are being created, freeing up some resources to get people directed towards the right things.
Senator Tomasoni.
Well, Madam Chair, I'll move to the 20 and the JCF 0020. And, you know, this might actually be a good thing from the standpoint that you might find out that you have too many electricians, but you don't have enough carpenters or something to that effect. And so, I mean, it could actually give the potential students a really valid information as to where the jobs are. And I think that ultimately our schools probably are nimble enough to figure out that if the numbers are going the opposite direction and they need more electricians or whatever the occupation might be, that they can adjust to it. I know we've been trying to do getting as many nurses out the door as we possibly can. We've had problems with that, and I don't know if that we've met the demand or not yet, but it's been a number of years now that we've been trying to meet the demand on nurses. And that's been more than anything. It's been a space limitation in the colleges, and they can have so many and produce so many. So I think that this will actually get to the issue of not offering programs where students graduate and then can't find jobs.
Okay, Senator Tomasoni moves the 0020 amendment. Any more discussion?
Senator?
Senator Latz.
Is there any formal process that by which Minsky reports to this committee or any other organization sort of the kind of information that is being proposed here? I mean, how their what their placement rate is? Is it included in their annual report to this committee, for example? I mean, there's a certain amount of accountability simply being required to assess the market however many years in advance and let an oversight body like this know what their projections are and how they may or may not be responding to it.
Ms. Weidman says it's in their accountability report, which I'm sure we saw at some point. Okay, any other comments? Then all those in favor of the 20 amendments, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All those opposed, say nay.
No.
Motion prevails. Okay, are there any other amendments? We have another amendment proposed by Senator Tomasoni. Yep, on page 8. Mr. Fuller.
Madam Chair, this is for Senator Tomasoni's approval. On page 8, line 29, delete the Board of Trustees and insert Chancellor. And then on page 9.8, before if, insert the Chancellor. The Chancellor must make recommendations by February 1st, 2010. To the Board of Trustees concerning the priority allocations, which is a term of art. And so that's, then I think another amendment may be helpful, which wasn't discussed, which is on line 8, delete these and insert delete programs, insert program. On line 9, delete R, insert is. On line 11, delete the programs and insert a program. So it's really too bad. I just noticed that. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, they'd have to throw everything out, it looks like, rather than program by program.
Right.
Okay. As long as you know what you just said, I'll move that.
Okay. Senator Tomasoni makes the aforementioned amendment. Any questions or comments? Senator Latz.
I would assume that, number one, the Board of Trustees knows something about what's going on in their institution with regard to this level. 30,000-foot view of their institutional priorities. And I would also assume that if they were directed to make some judgments, that they would have the chancellor put the information together and make a presentation to the Board of Trustees for evaluation and decision. So I'm not quite sure what the advantage would be. Maybe Senator Tomasoni can explain a little bit further what the advantage would be to have the chancellor do it without the Board of Trustees' formal involvement.
Well, I think they have to make the final determination, the board. Senator Tomasoni is just suggesting that the chancellor reviews the allocations and present to the board, which is probably the way it should happen anyway. Senator Tomasoni, any other comments?
Well, Senator Latz said a very important word. He said he assumes, and I don't know if that's what happens or not, so I just want to make sure it does.
The reason this is in here in the first place is that these were mandates on the board, and so we just wanted to say, okay, you know, we're giving you less money. Maybe we should give you less mandates, and you can decide what you think is of value here.
Well, I'm sure I agree with the provision that's in the bill generally.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's simply a question of, you know, whether we put in statute a mandate directing chancellor versus the board to do this. I guess maybe I'm missing some language here. It's, in 9.8, it says the board will determine if the program is a proposal to change that too.
Yes. The chancellor has to make recommendations. Yeah, no, the board still determines.
Yeah, the board still determines.
Yeah,
the
board still determines. So it's the chancellor reviewing them.
Mm-hmm.
And then recommending to the board to make changes.
Candidly, I don't know that. I'm not sure we need to make any change in what's already there. The chancellor is going to do the work anyway, and if we don't trust the board of trustees, we should change them.
They will be coming before us to be confirmed in a few weeks. I think Thursday,
actually. There's some questions for Senator Tomasoni to ask them.
We can ask them, right. Okay, Senator Tomasoni renews his motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, nay.
No.
Motion prevails. Any other amendments? Then I'd like to set the bill aside. I'd like to see if there's anybody who would like to testify. Especially the students. I talked to some of the students about the state grant program. Did you want to comment on that? Did you have copies of this chart for everyone?
A little bit. We already did.
No.
No.
We should do that now. Orally? Dr. Weidman, while you're coming up to the table, Dr. Weidman has another amendment that we needed to make. On what page is that?
It's on, Madam Chair, members, it's on page 19, and it deals with the teacher education report language that we put in last year. And I think when we were starting on 19.19, when we were talking about individuals that the office should consult with, I think we should also include MinSCU and the University of Minnesota, since they actually have the teacher education programs.
And MACTI.
And MACTI.
Senator Sharon, do you want to make that motion?
I do.
Senator Sharon moves that the office also consults with MinSCU, the University of Minnesota, and MACTI, which is Minnesota Association of College Teaching something.
Teacher education.
Teacher education.
It's teacher education program.
Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. And this is probably too much for the Office of Higher Education to take on. And so we're going to look for some advice from them on how we might be able to scale this back so that it's kind of, we can get started with it, but not have to complete it in a year, what we could do to get started. Okay, comments on the financial aid. Just introduce yourself for the record.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jacob Littler. I'm the president of the Minnesota State College Student Association, which represents 100,000 two-year public college students in the state of Minnesota. And I just wanted to take the opportunity to address you briefly on some of the proposed changes to the Minnesota State Grant Program. As the members know, there was a surplus created by the recent increase in the Pell Grant Awards in the ARRA from the federal level, and we believe that the best way to deal with that surplus is to make sure that the money is sent out in a way that kind of reflects the distribution of Pell Grant funds. And if you look on the handout that was just passed around, on the front page is a breakdown of how the Pell Grants are distributed amongst the different sectors in higher education in Minnesota. And as you can see, the vast majority of them are in our public sector colleges, just due to the fact that that's where the largest number of students are and tends to be, especially with our 2 years, where our low-income students kind of use that as an access point. And if you look on the backside, this is just a proposed, if all of the surplus grant money was put into the Living and Miscellaneous Expense Fund, this would be the distribution of where that money would go, once again broken down by sector. And as you can see, it mirrors almost exactly the breakdown of how Pell Grant money is distributed in the state of Minnesota. And we feel that that's the fairest way to distribute this money that was meant to go to Pell Grant recipients. This will send it out in such a way that kind of reflects how Pell Grants is originally received. That extra money would then go out in the same manner.
Would you spell your last name? Our committee clerk didn't get it.
Yeah, it's Littler.
Easy. Littler. Okay, any questions from members of the committee? Senator Sharon.
Would you speak more about what you made reference to the intent of the stimulus money as to what the intent of where that money was to go as a part of what you're describing as your rationale here. Would you talk more about that?
Mr. Littler.
Madam Chair, Senator Sharon, it's, you know, clearly by increasing the Pell Grant funding and increasing the maximum award of the Pell Grant, it was the intent to get that money into the hands of the students that were the neediest students, the ones who are receiving the Pell Grant already, and to increase that award so that they would then receive more money. And the way that the Minnesota grant formula works, as our Pell Grant award goes up, a student will then receive a reduction in their state grant award, resulting in the exact same amount of basic financial aid package, which would mean by raising the caps, you're just kind of sending that money to the higher cost institutions as opposed to lower cost institutions where, say, for a two-year school, when I receive my Pell Grant with a full Pell Grant and then my state financial aid, once the Pell Grant goes up, my state grant will go down and I'll receive the exact same amount. Whereas if I went to a higher cost institution because my budget would be larger under the state grant formula, I would receive more money under the proposed changes that are in the omnibus bill.
Senator Bepp, so you're saying that essentially by doing what we have proposed to do in this current bill, we are in fact keeping your the consequence of it is that a neutral, sort of an evening out for students who are in the two-year and the four-year program rather than really having a benefit from the Pell Grant dollars as opposed to other institutions.
Right. For the record, my name is Grant Mellon. I'm the Director of Government Relations for the Minnesota State University Student Association. Realistically, there are things that do help our students in here, reducing the assigned family share, help our students. It's because if you go to a higher cost institution, they get help more than our institutions, but that has helped. And we're helped by the small increase in LME is every student is helped proportionally. And I think you know, obviously, we represent the Minsky students, so there's the inherent bias in that, so take that with a grain of salt. But, you know, I think the thing is, in a time when, you know, the budgets are being cut for the state universities and for the U of M, you know, I've heard comments from legislators that there should be a shared sacrifice. And it seems like with the surplus, we're kind of having to take maybe two hits, maybe, or at least a zeroing out, not so much a benefit. And so I think we just would. It's in the past, the committee has looked at the LME, and since there is such a wide disparity between what is recognized as the cost of attending college and then what the actual cap is, that the committee in the past has tried to increase that as much as possible. And we testified with Senator Clark, was it last week? Because we think the money was intended for the most financially disadvantaged students, and the LME distribution is one way to kind of distribute it in the same kind of vein for those that are financially needy, and that's why we feel it's the most fair thing to do. So,
Chair. Senator Roebling.
The bill does have an increase for LME.
Yes.
And it reduces the family responsibility, and I guess that I know that cuts are being made to the institutions in this bill, but I also realize that the private schools are having a hard hit, too, right now. I'm well aware of how their endowments have suffered, and those endowments are often used, or the proceeds from the endowments are used for student financial aid, and the hit has been significant. So they will probably also have less financial aid to help buy down the cost for their low-income students. And I believe we want those students to have a choice of where they attend school. I really think that that's important. We shouldn't say all low-income students have to go to a state institution. And the way our grant program is set up, we give them more of an opportunity to think about other options for themselves. And, you know, we are supplementing the base of the institutions right now to help buy down that cost. And I guess that the grant program to me has always been partly designed to give students choice and making it more affordable for them. And so I've seen the costs of the tuition go up a lot in both private and public. And we know that the private start out much higher because they don't have that base institutional support from the state. And so helping out those low-income students, to me, is an important thing so that they have choice.
And I think that's, you know, with the increase in LME, it just benefits no matter where you go to an institution. It benefits every student no matter what your choice is equally, which, you know, was one of the reasons we support an increase in LME.
Madam Chair? Who's talking?
Me.
Oh, Senator Clark?
No, this number is below what the governor's even proposing, and I have to admit I'm a little concerned about that. The other thing that I think is very interesting, and I've got obviously all of these kind of schools either in or near my district and support all of them, but there's two things. One is we've been talking about all along wanting to maximize the Pell Grant dollars for those who are eligible for Pell Grants, and I'm concerned we're going away from that. The other thing is that I think it's interesting to note that the private for-profits are the ones that would actually benefit the most under this, and at a time where we've been even talking about what are we doing with our resources and where do they go, I think that's an interesting observation at least. So I have to admit, I personally am disappointed that the appropriation right now is at the level that it is, because I do think we would be better meeting what we have talked about if that was a higher number, and at least was hoping we would at least get to where the governor's number was.
Thank you, Senator. I was interested as well in the, Jacob, I wonder if you could speak, or Graham, either of you, the 42% or 44% under the, if there was LME distribution, would follow the Pell Grant. The 42% that you're talking about from the Pell Grant are the Minsky two-year institutions. And in all of this conversation about private, non-profit, profit, I think that we have some understanding that for the first-time student or for the students that are with limited resources, whether it's economic resources or social resources behind them, are highly likely to enter into the two-year system to introduce them to higher education. Is that true, first of all? That's something that I think I've been following in the data that we've been presented. And if so, since the Pell Grant is really trying to get at those places where we're able to assist people who have the greatest need, financial need, then I think this graph really demonstrates that if we create a system where the two-year system is not is kept neutral, that we are really impacting those that have the greatest need. Not that the people of need don't go to the other systems, but in terms of where we want to encourage people to move into higher education. Can you respond to that?
Yeah, Madam Chair. Speaking specifically to kind of lower income and students that have a lot of pressure on them to stay kind of locally, I think I had the opportunity to work with the Upward Bound program, which is a TRIO program up in Virginia, and one of the things we did was work with at-risk youth trying to get them into college, and there can be a lot of not just kind of socioeconomic pressure, but family pressure to stay in the area, and yeah, we want you to go to school, but we also still need you to be home to help out with things. So I think that's one reason that you'll see a lot of kind of the neediest students stick around their community and go to the community and technical colleges in their area. And also the larger percentage is very reflective of the fact that we have the most students in the state. So the majority of students in Minnesota are going to the Minsky system, and so it's just reflective of that the majority of the Pell Grant dollars would end up going to that system as well. But there can be a lot of not just socioeconomic pressure, but a lot of family pressure as well or regional pressure. Being from the Iron Range, there really is no four-year option locally for our students, as far as, especially if you want to go to a Minsky school, the closest you're going to find is Bemidji State, and that lends itself to a lot of students sticking around for 2 years after high school, attending one of their local community colleges, and then, you know, once they've kind of gotten their feet under them and they're ready to go, then they move on to the four-year level.
Oh, thank you, Jacob. I'm going to ask one more question, then I think we do need to move on unless there's some other question. the data that you've used for us on this comes from the Office of Higher Education?
It comes from the Minsku Central Office.
Minsku, thank you. Okay, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, the next on our agenda, Senator Wieger, you're going to be presenting Senate File 954. This is E16 Education Reform Recommendations, and I think Angie Eilers is here from the Growth and Justice. Thank you, and welcome to the committee. Senator.
Thank you, Madam Chair, division members. The E16 reform bill looks at the importance of having early education, K-12, and higher ed working together to address a lot of common issues. The Growth and Justice organization has put together a comprehensive report, and this legislation in Senate File 94 is the result of the recommendations in part that they have issued. Dr. Angie Eilers is here to address those recommendations. And to put the bill in the form I'd like to make a minor author's amendment. So at page one, Madam Chair, and I'll describe it overall, we have four senators and four reps that would serve on this 13-member group. I would have it two members from each party. So instead of 3-1, it would be 2-apiece for true bipartisanship. So to accomplish that, at line 14, you would delete 3 and insert 2. On line 115, you would delete 1 and insert 2 and put a S after senator. On line 16, delete 3 and insert 2. And finally, on line 17, delete 1, insert 2, and put an S after member. And I would so move.
It's been moved to accept the author's oral amendment. Is there any discussion? All those in favor? Aye. Aye. Opposed? Hearing none. Thank you. Please proceed.
Chair, my testifier is Dr. Angie Eilers from Growth and Justice.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, committee members. Thank you for your consideration of Senate File 954 for inclusion in this committee's omnibus bill. And you might be happy to know that we're not asking for money. We're simply forwarding a strategy for long-term investments, very comprehensive, that takes into consideration where our Minnesota students are at financially, academically, and in terms of their social awareness for post-secondary attainment. I have a small handout. I don't know if it's been handed out, which is a synthesis of the larger report, which I hope the committee has already received, but it is a research-based and cost analysis study that's been conducted over the last 2 years with considerable academic support. And we take the long-term view that the state needs to increase post-secondary attainment rates for all Minnesota students by the year 2020 by as many as 50% more than where we're at today. The argument for that is borne out very clearly, I think, in the demographic data, that if we do nothing between now and the year 2020, we'll actually have a smaller percentage of students who have something beyond high school. Just as we know, economically, we need to increase the number of students who have something beyond high school. The slowest growth is with our population who has historically obtained a post-secondary degree. That's our upper-income students and our white students. Our students of color are the fastest growing population, and now is the time to invest in all of these students so that they are academically, socially, and financially ready to enroll in and succeed in post-secondary education. We take a very comprehensive approach, as Senator Wieger said, investing early, investing throughout the education pathway so that a student is ready and succeeds in post-secondary. I just want to point out to the committee members on slide 7, which is a kind of a timeline. There are statutory requirements in place right now by which the year 2013 students have to read at the third grade level by the end of third grade. They have to take and pass Algebra 1 now in the eighth grade rather than the ninth grade. And they will have to take and pass rigorous math and science courses in their high school years, all of which is well-grounded in research. It suggests that this will ready our students for more rigorous learning and ready them for college. But, of course, there are going to have to be comprehensive approaches in getting these students on track and ready to finish their education. I have some bar graph tables here pointing out the number of students who are currently not proficient in reading at the fourth and the eighth grade level. Consistently, the number of students who are not at a proficiency level in math in the fourth and eighth grades, which is predictive of the fact that they will not be terribly ready for rigorous coursework in high school and therefore not qualified to enroll in and succeed in post-secondary education. So with our goal being post-secondary attainment, obviously we have to invest very comprehensively throughout the entire education pathway from early childhood through K-12 years and into higher ed. And there are many different efforts made in the K-12 system and the early childhood activities to ready students, such as expanding post-secondary enrollment options, advanced placement, international baccalaureate programs. But there are also information and financial access issues, which I know your committee addresses. And I applaud the work of this committee. It's been my observation that you are champions of access to higher education, and it's going to require some very comprehensive investments. But our caution is that when legislation is considered, that it be heavily grounded in research or evidence that these are the things that are going to work for the students who need it the most and in the most cost-effective way, given the limited dollars that we have. So what Senate File 954 attempts to put into place, because there are no current dollars, is rather an infrastructure to examine the barriers, access issues around finances, academic readiness, and social information that extend and expand upon our three sectors. In other words, this advisory council would transcend our current sectors of early childhood, K-12, and higher ed, and try to build in an infrastructure at no cost to address birth through third grade, meeting that third grade benchmark, the fourth through 12th grade years, which addresses rigorous coursework, and then the ninth grade years to the 16th years, which also addresses academic, social, and financial wherewithal to attend and finish a post-secondary degree program. I have done a cost analysis on what this would cost. We're not proposing that those investments be made in this bill, but rather that the infrastructure of an advisory council that adds legislative representation, much like the P20 partnership, that's another segment of your bill, but also adds, this bill is distinct from the P20 partnership in that it builds in research expertise so that there's a component to the advisory council that does some vetting of the worthwhile programs that are considered effective and therefore does some pre-legislative screening for committees like yours. Thank you.
Thank you, Doctor. Are there any questions? Senator Clark and then Senator Lynch.
Things. Thank you so much for being here, Dr. Eilers. And I'm not sure for which one of you this is for. I guess first off, there's at least one change that we need to make in here for this is going forward, Senator Wieger, on the with regard to the appointments, because this would need to go to Senator Rest Committee and to Rules. I know for sure it would have to be appointed by the Senate Subcommittee on Committees.
Madam Chair, Senator Clark, Wieger. That's correct. It has been to Senate Rest Committee already.
Okay.
And the intent is if it did make it into this bill, it would go
the bill
to
would
rules.
Need to go to Rules. And, we do need to change that, though. It does need to be a subcommittee on committees. We don't, the majority and minority leaders don't do that. But a couple quick things, and we've obviously talked about this before, but I didn't see it in an amendment. Who would be responsible for this? Where would it be housed? And at least our experience with even the early childhood, the governor's early childhood council, is there's a dollar that does get attached to doing the council. So are you thinking the LCC? Are you thinking the governor? Who would have this? And when would they be report? There's no reporting back time period or recommendation time period. Did you get any further on that?
Madam Chair, Senator Clark, I believe there are some dates on reports in here, some interim reports, and then, as you know, it sunsets in 2011. There's not an appropriation, though the group could seek funds from the private sector foundations for assistance. It does not have that appropriation. The oversight committee would be, as you see it, four from each body, plus the others that are noted from the commissioner's offices.
Madam Chair.
Senator Clark.
Where would it be housed, though? I mean, this would be the only thing that was kind of out there that wasn't kind of somebody usually has responsibility. And I do see the interim report, so that's good. But
Senator Wieger, where would it be housed? Office of Higher Education? Is that what you're referring to, Senator Clark?
Yes. Would it be higher ed? Would it be the Department of Education? Would it be LCC? Would it be something else?
See, Madam Chair, Senator Clark, I will suggest the Office of Higher Education.
Do we need to have that language added to the bill in some way, Senator Clark?
Probably. I mean, somebody's going to, my guess is that if it's the Office of Higher Education, they'd want to know it was coming to them, and then they're probably going to need to weigh in on if we can eliminate any cost. And
would somebody from the Office of Higher Education like to speak to the suggestion?
Madam Chair, members, for the record, I'm Mark Mishkansky with the Office of Higher Education. I'm a bit confused because at the top of page 2, the Director of the Commissioner of Education provides staff and meeting space. Do you expect something more than that?
Oh. Excuse me. Madam Chair, Senator Clark, and thank you for pointing that out. I believe when it went to Senator Rest Committee, that was language now in the engrossment. And so it would be the Commissioner of Education. We obviously would be working with higher ed and the other groups that are there, but the Commissioner of Ed on page 2, line 2.1.
Could you, thank you, Senator Weaker, could you refer me to where you're looking at that on page 2? 2.1.
Line
Commissioner
2.1.
Of Education, thank you very much. Senator Clark, does that adequately respond to your concern?
Yes, and what's a little bit hard because it's almost like entering into the middle of a conversation because Senator Weaker and I have talked about this before is if this is going to be in this bill, I mean, is now that it says education, does that mean it's going back to our other education committee?
Senator Weaker?
Because it's not obviously in that education.
Madam Chair, Senator Clark, it hasn't been requested. As you know, it was presented to that committee without objection and also looked at to be referred to this committee for additional reference, and absent another request to revisit it, it has been presented already.
And has a fiscal note been requested? I mean, because, I'm sorry, Madam Chair.
Senator Clark?
Because that was part of what we were dealing with there is we didn't have a place, it didn't have a home, it didn't have a rec, so we just didn't forward it. That it's a great idea, we just don't have part of that fleshed out.
Senator Weaker?
And Madam Chair, maybe Mr. Albrecht would know, I don't have a fiscal note that's been presented. It's been out for quite a while.
While they're conferring on that issue, I'll turn to Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Weaker, two questions. My first one is, on your various advisory subcommittees, is there a number specified? And how do people apply or get on this advisory committee?
Senator Weaker?
Madam Chair, Senator Lynch, on the oversight committee with the legislators and reps from the commissioner and the governor's office, there's 13 there. And then that group, during the next few months after it passed, they would form the subcommittees. And the subcommittees there's six, I believe, subcommittees, and they would determine, primarily looking at experts that would serve, and the charge for those respective subcommittees are listed in the bill.
Senator Lynch?
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Weaver. So there's not a specified number of advisory subcommittee members.
Madam Chair, Senator Lynch, that's correct.
And Madam Chair and Senator Weaker.
Senator Lynch.
My second question is the work that's being proposed to be done here, does this sort of fold in this P16 council or whatever has been referred to in the past?
Senator Weaker.
Madam Chair, Senator Lynch, I believe it's complementary to what the other group is doing, And as you know, I've been an author of that legislation as well. That's an ongoing group, which does not include legislators. And we're asking to be invited, but this bill provides much more prescription as to what we want done because we are the primary people involved. I thought it would be too presumptuous as new people on the P20 organization to tell them this is what you're going to do. And again, it's very short in duration and based on evidence-based research recommendations from this group. So I see the group as two parallel strategies.
Thank you. Senator Lynch.
Madam Chair and Senator Weir, and then to your desire to be a bit more prescriptive so that we get the information that we have long been looking for, on page 3, line 3.21, currently it reads, this advisory subcommittee shall at least address, and I tend to think that we get some of our best work when we are, as long as we are trying to detail what it is we're looking for. I think sometimes the more direct we can be, the better. And so I would suggest that on 3.21 that we delete the words least address and insert a minimum. So it would read, this advisory committee shall at a minimum, which means that, you know, the advisory committee would be clearly charged with doing these things. They could choose to branch off and do some additional work, although I think this is a pretty long and robust list for them to begin with. But I think that's a in fitting with maybe what the desired intent here is. So, Madam Chair, I would move that on 3.21, least address be deleted and insert a minimum. And I would ask counsel's help. I presume that that language probably plays through with the various different subcommittees throughout the bill. Like, on, for example, line 5.26, it would be the same thing.
Senator Lynch, would you read the sentence totally again? This advisory committee at a minimum shall address?
Madam Chair, 3.21.
Yes.
This advisory subcommittee shall at a minimum.
Address.
Address.
We'd have to keep address.
That's fine.
Yes, okay.
So we would be deleting the word least, inserting a minimum.
Senator Latz,
Madam Chair,
to the amendment. That's an. Are you making that? You're offering that as an amendment,
yes.
Senator Lynch, to the amendment.
Yeah, I'm. I guess I'm having trouble understanding what the difference would be. I guess I'd also advise the council whether it makes any difference or whether there's any specific drafting protocol that would be applicable here or not.
Mr. Fuller.
Madam Chair, Senator Latz, I don't detect a difference in between the two. I suppose the protocol is usually would be more leaning towards a minimum, but it usually says includes and not limited to the shall address. Yeah. But there's really no protocol, but this doesn't really change the meaning.
Madam Chair, I believe Senator Lynch's point is well taken. I think the language does embrace that intent.
Senator Clark.
Madam Chair, Senator Weger, I'm actually checking about, I think we're going to have to figure out how to get a fiscal note from the Education Department. But that aside, a concern or a question I have, and we may need some help from council in dealing with this, but the early advisory subcommittee, we put into law a governor's council. We have legislators, two each from the Senate and two each from the House, already on it. It's already functioning. It's started to get up and running.
Could you hold on that just for a moment, Senator Clark? We'll come back to that because we have an amendment on the table.
Okay. I was actually going to recommend that we actually eliminate subdivision two, but we could go ahead and tinker with it first, and then we could.
All right. Well, let's take action on. You want to withdraw your amendment,
Madam Chair? In light of Senator Clark's comments, I'll withdraw my amendment.
Okay. The amendment has been withdrawn, Senator Clark.
Yeah, I was. What's hard is Senator Weger's got some really good ideas in here, and so trying to figure out how we best move forward, knowing as Senator Lynch brought up before, we do have the P16 Council, and I know that the thought here is we need to really make sure we're using research base and using good evaluations, and all of that is very important. But I think it's also important we're not duplicating efforts, and I would think if we could replace Subdivision 2 with the governor's council, because we spent a lot of time working on that last session, and we've got we changed the words, we changed their charge, we also have got some, if there's some language missing and something, we could modify what we're doing in the education bill with regard to that too. But
Madam Chair, Senator Clark, I agree.
Okay.
And if you wanted to make that the appropriate motion that would delete sub 2 and any other reference, and then as this would hopefully progress, we could have some linkage language to the work of the group that you've worked so hard on. We want to make sure that we don't have all these different silos.
Right. And Madam Chair, Senator Wicker, I'm
Senator
not
Clark.
Sure what the best way to do this is that the council that we've worked on is up to kindergarten, and this is obviously divided into two different areas. And so I don't know, perhaps there is a way in which we can end up referencing the governor's council for the things that are under five, because obviously we've got actually some language regarding pre-kindergarten through third grade in our education bill, too, so that certainly is important.
If I could just offer testimony,
yes,
on that. The key outcome for early childhood investment, we would argue, would be that all students are reading by the end of third grade, which is statutorily required. So if the birth through third grade intent and or the existing advisory council could be expanded to include that age range comprehensively, some sort of amendment to that, or at any rate, the goal is to tie an outcome to the work of the advisory council in early childhood.
Senator Clark, and then we'll...
I think we'd have to go back and talk with the governor's folks about that. Personally, I don't know that people would have a huge amount of disagreement. We had limited it to making sure we were closing the achievement gap prior to kindergarten, and then certainly believe that alignment with your goal is really important. So, I mean, certainly be willing to keep on working on that. But that is one of the challenges with the way that this is set up, is we do have something existing, and maybe we could figure out how to add an additional charge into that. That's a good idea.
Is there a motion that you want to make to at this point?
Well, I'm trying to figure out, Madam Chair, how to do that without if we just delete the subdivisions. I'm a little concerned that we will have hindered part of the goal that you have here. Although, if we could maybe we could. With a little help from council, we could delete the subdivisions and insert some language with regard to the early childhood council, the governor's council, and have those components
expanded.
I mean, just be acknowledging that that's what we're using instead of this for those components. But there's a lot here, so we'd have to relook at how we.
Well, Mr. Fuller is looking at that. I'll ask Senator Lynch. Did you have a question? Earlier, it looked like you might have been asking something.
Madam Chair, and Senator Clark or Senator Wicker, I'm not familiar with the work of the governor's council in this area, but is there something like that for these higher grades and for post-secondary? I mean, I sense what Senator Wicker is trying to do here, and I think that's very, very much necessary and needed. I'm not well-versed enough to know what other mechanisms we have out there and how we bring those together. And so I'm asking for some help with that, or can we work through that?
Perhaps what we need to do is just to, since you're going to be moving forward to finance, there'd be opportunity if we get this into language into our bill, that there'd be an opportunity for you to work on this language between now and finance.
Well, Madam Chair, if I totally support Senator Clark's intent here and know of what's evolving, but the underlying importance of integrating all the efforts for the whole system is imperative. So, I would support the concept that was proposed by Senator Clark, and with staff, we could work on the language. So if she wanted to move that, and with that intent.
Yeah, state government. Senator Wieger, state government has already seen this bill. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yes. Senator Lynch.
Madam Chair, just a procedural question, maybe one that council can help us with. Just having seen some other committee and task force and work group creation bills, it makes me, should I be nervous about incorporating something into our omnibus bill that we don't have a fiscal cost associated with at this juncture in time? And I would ask that question whether it was this or anything else. But is that a concern? If it's not a concern, let me run down to my office because I probably have a couple other things that
you'd like to throw in here, huh?
We could throw in. But maybe council could offer some counsel on that.
Well, thank you, Senator Lynch. You know, we have a fiscal note that if this is in our bill would have fiscal implications associated with it. So that's another concern for us to be concerned about.
Madam Chair, can you talk about that? Because I know that you've been, Senator Wieger, been waiting for it, and we hadn't seen it.
Mr. Albrecht.
Madam Chair, and Senator Clark, and Senator Wieger, this fiscal note appears to be dated, completed on March 18th. And the only cost on the fiscal note is for the legislature, and it looks to me like that reflects travel and per diem costs for the legislative participants in these various committees. The amount for fiscal year 2010 is $7,000, and $7,000 also for fiscal year 2011.
Senator Clark.
Madam Chair, Mr. Albrecht, was that before or after it went to Senator Rust committee and it was assigned somewhere? Because that doesn't include any staffing, and at least the Department of Education and everything else we've given them, and the Education Committee has given us amounts of costs for staff time.
Mr. Albrecht?
At least according to this version of the fiscal note, Senator Clark, the Department of Education doesn't indicate that they would have any costs.
Yes,
Senator Clark.
Mr. Nauman, provide some information.
Thank you, Mr. Nauman.
Madam Chair, Senator Senator Clark, as part of our process in the Education Finance Division, the E-12 Funding Division, we normally request fiscal notes on bills that have been referred to it. I did that early in the session when the bill was first introduced. The date that Mr. Albrecht reports reflects the date when that fiscal note returned. The fiscal note's a consolidated fiscal note. I believe it has Departments of Human Services, the Legislature, and Education that several components to it. Only the Legislature came back with a cost associated with it. So it seems to me there might be a jurisdictional issue with the state government division that they may have a cost to bear as a result of that. But I don't think that this division would carry a cost. And I think the E-12 bill, which is already completed, would not carry a cost either.
Thank you, Mr. Newman.
Thanks, sir.
Thank you.
Madam Chair,
Senator Wieger.
If Senator Clark wanted to make a motion with the intent, and then I was going to also suggest the subcommittee on committees for making appointment. In fact, maybe I could make that motion to reflect that the subcommittee on committees would make the appointments as opposed to the speaker and majority leader, or perhaps council could address.
Those would be two actions that we'd need.
I'll yield to council for the wording on that, or they can just put that in the next version.
So we're working on some language about the who makes the appointments, but then a separate question is whether or not Senator Clark wants to make a motion.
Yes.
Madam Chair.
Yes. Senator Roebling, then Senator Lynch.
On the appointments, I'm on state and local government, and we continuously change it so that the appointments are made by the majority leader and the minority leaders just to try and make sure that we have balance and that each caucus is represented by people who want to be on it. And so I don't know what's been happening when it goes to the Committee on Rules. If they're changing them all back again, But as a minority member, I have concerns about the minority making sure they get people that are either recommended by the minority leader or have an opportunity to choose and say yes or no instead of just having the majority appoint everybody, because the subcommittee is made up largely of the majority.
Madam Chair.
Senator Clark.
Senator Roebling, I too would share your concern, but that is what happens. The minority leader is the one that puts forward who the minority would like to have, and then it comes to the committee, and it's decided that way. And it will get changed again. I mean, that's what we've been doing. But the committee, the minority leader is supposed, sometimes I know it takes a while to find somebody who's interested, but that's the way the committee operates, is where possible, we want to make sure that the minority is getting a chance to do that. And it will get changed. So I was just trying to make our lives easier.
Do your best, huh? Senator Lynch, before we go to some motions, did you have anything further? Okay, Mr. Fuller, do you have some language for us to consider?
Madam Chair, with respect to the subcommittee on committees, on page 1, line 15, delete, and insert, subcommittee on committees of the Committee on Rules and Administration, and delete on line 16, everything up to the first comma.
Okay, that is motion by Senator Clark. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Okay, the motion passes. Is there another? Are you prepared to speak to the second issue, Senator Clark? Did you want to say something further?
No, I think, Madam Chair, I think staff was working on it.
Yes.
Well, Madam Chair, I don't have a perfect thing. If we're talking about subdivision 2 and we're deleting it, but we want a placeholder with respect to this entity, which is called State Advisory Council on Early Childhood Education and Care, I guess I would delete subdivision 2 and in its place insert a new subdivision 2 that's head noted State Advisory Council on Early Childhood Education and Care, and do something like the Oversight Advisory Committee shall consult with the State Advisory Council on Early Childhood Education and Care on matters relating to the jurisdiction of the Advisory Council, period. And that's a placeholder.
Madam Chair, I think
Senator Clark.
I think that's good. It doesn't fully address part of Subdivision 3's problem because it's got the 3 and 4-year-olds there too. And Senator Lantz and I were just talking about this doesn't, maybe as a placeholder, because we'd still need to work on it, because either doing kindergarten through third grade or transition through third grade, because there are a number of things here that are, the challenge is if it's under kindergarten, it really is that other group. So that's the only other thing we were trying to figure out. Or Dr. Eiler's suggestion was we could expand that other group to be early childhood through third grade, and we could do that as well. We would need, as a placeholder, that might be the very easiest thing to do is delete the content that's in subdivision 2 and 3 and expand the jurisdiction of that as a placeholder, because we would have to work that out with the administration.
What we could do is describe clearly the intent, and then the staff could work out the language and place it in when we include this in the omnibus bill.
That would be great. Madam Chair, I'd certainly be happy to work with staff on that too.
So in order to accomplish that, we will have a motion to do that. And
so moved.
And that's moved by Senator Clark. Is there any further discussion or clarification that people need about what it is we're doing here? How about from staff? Mr. Fuller.
Chair, we'll work with the two authors. The understanding is we want to involve this a council which has expertise and utilize them rather than an advisory council in that area. So we'll do what we're told.
Okay, great. Thank you.
So any further questions or discussion? Senator Wieger?
Madam Chair, I want to again thank Growth and Justice for their year's work in putting this together, and I deeply thank each of you at this late hour in the process for your thoughtful recommendations. And with that, I would move that Senate File 954.
I think we have to take an action on Senator Clark's motion first.
Okay. I thought
we the action to direct staff.
Okay.
Correct? Any further discussion? All those in favor? Aye. Opposed? Now we can take your motion, Senator
Move
Wieger.
That Senate File
954. Senator Lynch? Okay. Excuse me, Senator Wieger.
I have to ask this question again. And I just was sort of glancing on page 5, on line 5.21, where it talks about 9 through 12 advisory subcommittee and all of those things. I just have to ask, are we not doing this? I'm not sure if we're not doing it or if we are doing it and the dots aren't well enough connected, or are there entities that have been charged with this and we need to hear from them? I mean, do we have charges that are sitting out there and they're just, it's not happening? I'm not sure. I think we need to do this, but I'm feeling a little frustrated, like, oh my gosh, if we're not already having these conversations, shame on us. And if we are having the conversations and the dots aren't being connected, I'm not sure that introducing a new bill is the appropriate mechanism. So I'm just trying to get more information from my friends that serve more directly in those jurisdictions.
Chair, Senator Wieger or Dr. Angie Eilers, either of you like to respond to that?
Initially, Madam Chair, Senator Lynch, there's a myriad of conversations and discussions going on, so many aspects of this that we have in the bill. The problem is trying to get a handle on it, and that is the main reason that we have this oversight committee. But I'd like to yield to Dr. Eilers.
Dr. Eilers?
Madam Chairman, Senator Lynch, if I could offer that. The impetus behind addressing a research-based proposal is particularly addressed to the students who are in the achievement gap. So clearly there are a number of students who are not reading at the third grade level, able to do math at the proficiency level at the grade level, or taking or passing rigorous coursework that would either guarantee their qualifications for enrolling in a post-secondary degree program, which would ready them obviously for a more productive life. And this is a way of getting at the question of, with our limited fiscal dollars, where are we spending on education that meets these students' particular needs? If they can demonstrate effectiveness at closing the achievement gap or closing the proficiency gap, then we would argue that our next Minnesota dollar should be invested directly at those areas that put these students back on track and are known to work. So there are many things that are where we are expending dollars. We haven't a particular council of advisors who are accounting for the number of dollars being spent in Minnesota, and yet we have a number of students failing or not achieving at the highest level. So in a way, this is an effort to take account of where our dollars are going, whether they're working or not, and then advancing those investments for those programs that we know that work for our students.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And as to the question Senator Lynch asked about whether or not we're doing that, you know, I think a number of educators and educational institutions are trying to do it, but we aren't doing real well. If we were doing well, we wouldn't have a provision in this bill that has the Summer of Success program in, which is a transition time for students that are graduated from high school, but they take the AccuPlacer test to see where they should be placed for college-level courses, and we find out we can't even place them at all because they're not ready for college-level work. So then we're going to offer them a summer session for remedial work before they ever start college. But they just graduated from high school. And you think, well, they should be ready for that post-secondary experience, which is what this is calling for, to make sure that they're ready. But there are just too many that aren't ready. And so I don't know where we're falling down, but we are falling down, because otherwise we wouldn't even have to think about funding that other program, which there is a need for, because we are finding all these students who are simply not ready. But, you know, I'm on the E-12 committee too, and I think a lot of our work needs to be done there. And this we deal with the fallout when that system is not working as well as it should.
Senator Wieger, we've been doing a little background information and discovered that there has been an addition to the bill that refers to the Commissioner of Education that occurred after the fiscal note that we received, and so there's no reference in here as to what the fiscal implications would be for this committee. And so until we get a better understanding of that, I think it's been suggested to me, and I would support this if you were, I'd like your reaction, to just lay this on the table and deal with it through an amendment in the Finance Committee. Senator Clark.
Sorry, Madam Chair. Senator Wieger, I think our other challenge is since education has been put in there, we never took action on it in the committee that has most of the jurisdiction over the subject matter, and it would seem that the chair might actually want to see it if there's a fiscal implication, because I mean, we may decide we're going to carry it here, but it has, as Senator Roebling was saying, it has the most direct application to the other committee. And so I think we just, Growth and Justice has done some really good work, and I know that this was an effort to try to make sure we're being thoughtful and planning. And Senator Wieger, I know that part of your attempt here is to have legislators more actively engaged in a broader oversight and planning and looking long term. And I think that those are really good things, but I'm not entirely sure still that we've figured this all out yet about where, which bill it fits in and where and how and all of that. So I think laying on the table for right now is probably a good idea so we can figure out what those implications, figure out whether or not Senator Stump's going to want to see it back in committee or not.
Well, Madam Chair, I did advise the Senator Stump, at least an awareness of where it was traveling, and the basic intent is still there. I would hope that the Commissioner of Education wants to weigh in with a fiscal note or something. They're aware that this has been posted twice on the committee schedule, and but I would have it lay over until it goes to finance, and then be prepared with an amendment if that's what the recommendation is. I get tired of seeing reports just gather dust instead of momentum. Yes.
Senator Lynch.
Madam Chair, was this, and to Senator Weir, was this bill was heard in K-12?
Madam Chair, Senator Lynch, the E-12 Policy and Finance Division had a presentation on the report, part of what you heard from Dr. Eilers, and we referred it to Senator Lynch's, or Senator Lynch to Senator Rest's committee, and then it came to this division.
I think the only course we can take is to lay it on the table and get the actual fiscal information that we need to know where those fiscal implications, whose budget that will be managed in, and that we can deal with some of this through in the Finance Committee through an amendment if we're able to resolve those issues. Would you be willing to make that a motion, Senator Clark? Or Senator Wieger?
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Senator Wieger. Moves, we lay it on the table. Is there any further discussion?
Well, Madam Chair, just for the record, it was pointed out for fiscal note from the department, and if they're able to resolve that, we're the legislature, so we need to move on, and they have persons that can step forward. The earlier version, March 17 or so, indicated no impact. The reference was the involvement from them, but we'll wait patiently, but it's the intent for us to ultimately move ahead.
Senator Wieger, just so that everybody's fully informed, I'm going to have Mr. Albrecht read the statement so that everybody's clear about what I'm reacting to.
Madam Chair and Senator Wieger and members, the fiscal note dated March 18th from the Education Department specifically says that the Department of Education will not contribute funding or staff for the operations of the Oversight Advisory Committee or its subcommittees. And the language on 2.1 specifically directs them to provide the staff support and meeting space for those purposes. So it would seem that the bill, the version of the bill that the department was looking at when they prepared their fiscal note did not include that language. And it looked to me from just my quick perusal of the bill as it was introduced that it did not include that language.
Anything further to the motion?
Madam Chair.
Senator Latz.
While the bill is still technically before us, I understand there are these procedural and jurisdictional and fiscal issues, but the underlying research that is the basis for this bill and the underlying goals of this bill from birth all the way through the highest age or grade covered here is very substantial and very important. I'm not as familiar with what the governor's council will be taking a look at, how it's constituted and what they're charged with, and how significant their analysis will be in terms of relying on research-based, peer-reviewed analyses of what works and what doesn't work. But I think for that council to have significant weight and impact when they do make a report, they would be well advised, regardless of where this ends up, the bill that's before us, well advised to make sure it's well grounded in solid science and research and not in political pontificating. I don't say that like I expect it to be, but I don't want it to be either, because I want what it comes out of it to have an impact that we can use to make improvements in our education system here. And for the part that's not covered by the governor's council, to the extent certainly that is not being done somewhere else, what is before us now is a very well thought out approach to it. And it ought to be done somewhere. If we can make progress with this here this year, especially if it's not being somewhere else, we ought to make progress with this here this year, because we don't really have much time to wait. It's very easy to say it'll happen down the road. Pretty soon you're down the road, and you wish stuff had happened a few miles before.
Thank you, Senator Latz. Is there another comment? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Thank you very much, Senator. And I think that concludes, excuse me. Okay, so we will need a motion to report to the Finance Division. Senator Lynch, is there anything further in that motion, Mr. Fuller, that needs to be stated? And with the intent of that the report reflects the intent of the discussion of this committee, and the staff will make the technical changes necessary to make that report prior to presenting at the Finance Committee. That's moved by Senator Lynch. Is there anything further to be said? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? It passes. And I believe that concludes our business today. That concludes the meeting is adjourned. Wait, sorry.
Don't we have to pass the bill?
The meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
Yes.
Because she was hoping it would be in the bill, right?
Doesn't
it
have a number? That is a bit of a technical problem. I thought finance had to have it.
Where do you see it?
Yes.